If you look at a lot of organizations that have, and I'll call it as it is, that have toxicity within them, and toxicity where there's the ego at play, people are thrown under the bus. The revenue and profit, because that's what organizations care about, right? What's the revenue? What's the profit? The revenue and the profit doesn't grow. At times, it even lowers, it reduces. But there's no change in, like, there's no push to change behavior because no one wants to admit that it's the behavior that's causing this.
I like that.
And understanding how valuable family and community is. And we've built this community where we have potlucks. You know, people bring food, we sit, we eat. We don't do the whole, lunch is 12 to 2 p.m.
Yeah.
No, start coming to the house from 12 and we can be there until 11 p.m. or someone starts sleeping. And if you need to sleep, there's a spare room, you can sleep in there. Mm. And that's what I want to build. And that's what I'm building. And I think if more of us practiced this and got out a little bit out of our individualism and what makes me look good, but what's good for the collective, it is connection. I'll tell you this. I was on the train one time and I was crying because it was within the first 2 years. I was crying. I was really homesick and I was extremely sad and depressed. And I was just crying. I couldn't stop myself. And a woman just came, sat next to me and just held me gently. We didn't say anything. Mm. I still have no idea who she is. But she was a white woman, came, sat next to me and just held me gently. So to me, I have no idea who she was, but what drove her to do that?
Ubuntu.
Exactly. So I think that all of us have it, but it's about the moment that you realize we're not in competition. We're not in competition. You rising up means I rise up too.
Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of A Journey with Bernie and Chip. Do you hear that little croak in my voice?
It occurred to me. It occurred to me. I thought it might be the thing that could finally just take your volume down.
There's every chance that. Thank you, Central Coast Grammar School.
Yeah.
You wonderful, beautiful students. Did we have a hoot yesterday, Chip?
We can hear that you had an absolute hoot. The hoot didn't end, apparently. It began at 8:30 and carried right the way through.
120 year 11 students, and we went on a heck of a journey. I called it leadership for life, but in reality, it was a personal investigation of how I can see myself, my peers, and life differently. And I'm really happy to say this. I think we learn a lot together. That's the year 11 students from Central Coast Grammar School. Hi out there.
Shout out, kids. Well done.
But Chip, I feel as if we're going international this morning.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well, apart from reaching 52 countries, which
I was wondering how long till you drove that one. I'm glad we got that in.
Transistor tells us that we're reaching so many listeners from so many different countries. We have an incredible guest here this morning, and I'm particularly excited because it takes me back to my African roots. And then when I say, I'm not born in Africa or East Africa. But when I say my African association, it's because for many years I was taking young people from Australia. We were going across to East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania, climbing that incredible mountain, Kilimanjaro. And the memories of my interaction with those communities are just blessed. Some of the most beautiful people I've ever met and wonderful friends made in the process of exploring Kibera, the great great slum of Nairobi, climbing the great mountain, working with four different primary schools and their teaching administrations while we created an athletics carnival for the kids at the foot of Kilimanjaro. Great, great memories. Now, M, and that's as far as I'm going with your name. E-M.
Come on.
Magnus too I much want for you.
I want you to I want you to teach us how to pronounce your name, your fullness of your name correctly. Yeah. Over to you, M.
Well, so my full name is Emagnus.
Emagnus?
Emagnus.
Yes.
And it's important to get this right because it's a name that was made out of love.
Wow.
So my mom's name is Agnes.
Okay.
My dad's name, Emmanuel.
Yes.
And they combine them to make a Magnus.
Okay. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if anything, just get that one right.
Yes. Emagnus. Emagnus.
Rushidzo.
Rushito. That Rushito. Almost sounds, there's like a little bit of Spanish about it, a bit of European about it. Yes, no?
Rushito.
No?
And you just think of like the zo element, if you think how you pronounce reds, reds, like
reds.
You say z there. Yeah. So it's zo, Rushito.
Rizzo.
I've got no idea where the reds in that comes from.
It usually works. Like I usually say, just say reds and people say reds and then Rizzo and they get it.
Well, for the sake of this podcast, so that I don't have to be distracted by the full memory of all of those syllables and vowels.
He struggles.
I'm gonna keep it down to beautiful M, a child of love.
It works.
Thank you.
You're a treasured guest here. We've already had a most magnificent meeting or two, so I know what's ahead for our listeners here. But how about you just please start? We could start where you were born, what part of Africa. Just give us a little bit of a taste of those early days, please, in Africa.
Oh, so I was born in Zimbabwe.
Wow.
And I'm sure as your listeners would know, Africa has 52 different countries.
Yeah.
And Zimbabwe is one of the best ones.
Wow.
Yeah, I like that patriotism.
Wow. Yes.
Well done.
Zimbabwe.
Well done.
And we call it the teapot country. So if you look on the map, it is actually shaped like a teapot.
Okay.
And you get some of the best tea leaves from Zimbabwe. Yeah. So there might be packaged something else out there, but you get the best coffee, the best tea.
Yeah.
Tea leaves from Zimbabwe and the best wine. So we love our wine. We love our wine. Like, give us a good wine any day. We love that. Yeah. So I was born in Zimbabwe in Harare. Harare is the capital city.
Yeah.
And we have an interesting dynamic in Zimbabwe. We've got, and I'm sure in some African countries where you have the rural areas and then you have the urban areas. So I grew up in the urban areas.
Yes.
And my dad's parents were in the rural areas.
Okay.
So when we needed a bit of country air, because the air is really nice and clean, would go and visit. So that was nice. But I grew up in the urban area.
Yeah.
And the first years, I just remember community. Like I grew up with my mom and dad, but it really felt like I grew up surrounded by a lot of moms and dads.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, anyone could discipline me, so I had to be careful how I behaved outside the house.
Yeah.
I have a young sister who, again, grew up in that community where it's like everyone is your parent. Everyone older than you has a right to say, you need to behave better.
Wow.
Or something. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's totally okay.
Did you used to call the men of the community as a child looking up at the men, do you used to call them uncle?
Yes. Everyone's uncle.
Yeah.
Everyone's uncle. And interesting enough, when we moved, and this it's an interesting one. When we moved to Australia, my husband and my child, who was almost two at the time.
Yeah.
Naturally, young people do not call older people by their first names.
Yeah.
And she would call anyone older than her uncle.
Yeah.
And this man was shocked, this white man, like looking at this little brown child, calling him uncle. And he's like, I'm not your uncle.
Yeah.
And we had to explain to him that in my culture, anyone older, we do not use first names. It's uncle and aunties. From a cultural perspective, everyone was uncle or auntie out of respect.
Yeah.
So because there's the this, it's about, you know, the person's older, and if they're older, they're wiser. They yeah. know more than you know. So
yeah.
an element of respect. If yeah. I call you by your first name, that's yeah. a level of familiarity.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be familiar with a five-year-old.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
there's got to be boundaries
yeah,
there.
Yeah. yeah. And just in terms of that too, because you talked about how sort of any adult could have disciplined you, but it cuts the other way too. And so any adult, if they have the right to discipline you, they also take on the responsibility of ensuring your well-being too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, and again, see, this bakes off you. I think that cultivates a really deep, innate sense of security.
Mm.
You know, because you grew up in this environment where things might not have been always comfortable, and they shouldn't be for any child because that's how you spur people to grow, but you probably always felt safe enough to take risks and do all that and, you know, you cultivate this kind of personality. Do you think that's
yeah.
fair?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that I appreciated the most growing up, and I know that now, growing yeah. up I didn't realize it, but I would never have guessed that the reason my mom was packing a little bag of groceries for our neighbor is because our neighbor had fallen on tough times.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
no one would ever know.
Yeah,
we would go to our neighbor, eat food,
yeah.
and it's just, it amazes me that people would be struggling.
Yeah.
But if a child came through that door, that child would be fed.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd get food, yeah. you'd be cooked for, yeah. you'd be fed. It didn't matter what was happening with them. But again, no one really suffered because yeah. we took care of each other, well, my parents did. And it's just, that was natural. Like, that was yeah. normal. That yeah. was a normal thing growing yeah. up. And we didn't have... It wasn't, I grew up in a non-gated community, so we could just walk to people's houses and that was normal. Yeah. Mm.
When I was taking the Australian kids to Africa, and that was every December for about, I'm going to go 18, nearly 20 years, you know, yeah. And we'd go visit Kobera. And I'd go back to the same household year after year. And I remember this one mum, and I would see her in her 12-square-metre corrugated iron shack.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the previous year, she had had a baby or there was a 2-year-old child just starting to walk. And I remember the child's name. We used to call the child the Chook.
Mm.
Chook. I came back the following year. I said, Mama, where's the Chook? And she would go, I do not know. I said, are you worried? Shall we go looking for the Chook? Mm. She said, no, no worry. Someone looking after my baby. Tomorrow, I will look after their baby.
Ah, yeah.
And I remember this awareness of the power of community that existed. And of course, the awareness that maybe back here in this country, we're not even talking to our neighbors, you know? Fascinating, different upbringing and a different set of foster values, foundation values underlying our perceptions of each other.
It's community. It's community. I am because you are. So, you know.
I am because you?
Because you are.
What does it mean?
So it's like, it's the concept of Ubuntu, which is, we are because of other people. So the reason I'm sitting here talking to you in Australia is because there are people that have invested in me.
Yeah.
Values, finances, everything. They've invested in me with no personal benefit. So it's never about what am I going to gain out of investing in you. It's about I see the potential in you and I want you to do better than I've done, or I want you to make an impact, influence, all that. So I will invest in you, whether that's through storytelling, whether that's through money, whether that's through values, and then you grow. So I am here and I am because you are.
See, what I find fascinating about that is that's top of mind for you.
Mm.
When I say top of mind, here you are in a podcast. Mm. You've had a business morning.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And yet top of mind for you to talk about is you're here because other people in your life have been a foundation to give you the gifts that you have and the presence and the branding that you possess that allow you to be here. So you are mindful of being thankful to that community. I'm not quite sure that we in the Western world have that as top of mind like you do.
It's just, it's ingrained. It's ingrained. And it's such a positive thing because what it does is everything that I do. So this morning I was at, I'm going to throw this in.
Yeah. It's what we call
flex.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that in. But I was speaking at Parliament House this morning and I was talking about building an empowered personal brand.
Yeah.
And the reason I talk about not just a personal brand, because a personal brand is external. So it's about, okay, we can see you. Yes, it's front facing, how you're dressing, and then you're judging a person on face value. But based on the way I was brought up, the way I grew up and my values, what's important to me is how are you inside?
Yeah.
So that's where the empowerment comes in, because if you're empowered, that means you're confident, you care about the next person, and people are not a threat. And when people are not a threat, what happens? You want to uplift them.
Yeah.
You want to uplift them because they're not a threat to you.
Yeah.
So that concept of that intrinsic value, I am valuable because I am. That's it. Like I am what I am. I'm valuable.
Yeah.
And the more of us that have this intrinsic value in who we are and ourselves, the more we start imparting this. So that's the concept I was talking about today, where it's an empowered personal brand. You want to uplift, you want to be seated at the table, not so that you can buy the Maserati. I mean, it would be nice if that's your thing, but you're seated at the table because you want to make sure that future generations are not going to be having the same discussions that we're having now.
Yeah.
We're going to address the things that impact our communities, not things that will buy me that mention up the hill, but no, it is how can we make sure that every child in Australia has food on the table.
Yeah.
Like, it's those simple discussions. But the reason why I want more people uplifted to be comfortable enough to sit around decision-making tables is because this whole concept of Ubuntu is not exclusive to Zimbabwe. Most African societies, most African communities practice this. So it's something that is important and ingrained.
Yeah.
And if we blend it, look, I admire some concepts of Western civilization.
Yeah.
And I think that bringing the best of that and the best of Ubuntu, combining that, it would be a powerhouse. Like, anyone we come across could be transforming their communities in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, right? Let's do it.
Because when you were speaking about community before, there is another word that comes up. I have a feeling that foundation of community, this is the way that you lived. This is the way that you were brought up. But it also creates connectedness, that feeling of connectedness with so many people. The osmosis of that is I am connected to all. How safe does that make you feel? What is the benefit and the value of feeling that you are connected to all of humanity? Is that an exaggeration or is that a fair extrapolation?
It's not an exaggeration. I think what it does is if we look at – let's go scientific here. So, you know, there's the scientist Albert Bandura who talks about self-efficacy. That's the belief that you can do anything.
Yeah.
It's that belief. And when you're connected, when you're this interconnectedness that I grew up with, I have this belief that I can do anything because everyone is my cheerleader. If I'm climbing that tree, and I really shouldn't have because I broke my arm, but if I'm climbing that tree, I'm not having someone coming and say, don't climb that tree, you're going to fall. They will wait. And I will fall. Unfortunately, I did fall. Like, I loved climbing trees and I fell. But what I learned out of that is there's always going to be someone who's got my back, because immediately I was taken to hospital. Obviously, I was fixed, my arm's fine. But that made me feel safe to explore and to experiment.
I'm sorry, but you're going to have to. I want you to nail that. I reckon that's a ripper. concept of the interconnectedness provides a safety environment.
Mm.
It provides an empowerment in a safe environment for you to explore. In your own words again, but I want that in a sentence or two. You nail it. Go, girl.
I belong everywhere. So it gives that sense of belongingness.
Mm. Yeah.
Belongingness. I belong everywhere.
Yeah.
So no space is out of my limit. I belong. The confidence that gives is that I can do anything. I can achieve anything. I can be anything because everyone around me believes in me and invests in me. So that connectedness and that sense of community and purpose is I am because you are.
Mm. Yeah, it's weird, hey, because you remove the idea that you have to do it alone and that enables you to be self-sufficient, doesn't it? Yeah.
And you got all this support around you. You got, you know that you're, you know, someone's got your back. You got this empowerment, this force. Is that spiritual in any way?
I do believe that humans are spiritual. From a cultural perspective, most of us are connected to what we call Mwari. So Mwari is God, but Mwari sounds deeper and more intense. So we've got this, we're so attuned to, and this is an interesting one because we feel deeply. I believe everyone feels deeply, but we are allowed to feel deeply.
Yeah.
So we feel deeply and we've got this connection with, you know, people talk about connection to land.
Yeah.
And it sounds a little bit strange, but there's this thing where you're connected to nature. So if you're connected to nature, so everything around you is feeding. I'll give you an example of a time I visited my grandparents in the rural. So you remember I said there's rural, there's urban.
This is back in
Zimbabwe. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I wish it was in Australia, but no. Back in Zimbabwe. And I had the worst thing a child can get, which is mumps.
Remember mumps.
And it was such a strange thing for me. And we're immunized. Like I thought, oh, okay. But I got mumps when I was probably 10 years old.
Yeah.
And they were just starting, they were so uncomfortable, I couldn't eat anything. And my dad took me to, he was visiting his parents and we went together. And as soon as I got to the rural areas, my grandma took my hand and said, we don't get sick in this community.
Yeah.
And she applied, so we took a walk around the mountain. So there are beautiful mountain views. And we took a walk and she was telling me to breathe in deeply. Breathe in deeply to connect
with
the nature. Mm. And everything was beautiful and quiet, a little bit cold, but it was beautiful. And we're barefoot because you needed to feel the ground under you. And to be honest, that to a 10-year-old was a bit bizarre. But something magical happened in that moment where I don't know how long we spent in the mountain area, but I connected to the land, I connected to the air and everything around me. And the next day I didn't have mumps.
Mm.
Gone.
See, I've just got connectedness going through my head, left, right and center at the moment. Because what you're saying is those, that tribal foundation, those values that you're talking about, not only did they promote connectedness with people through the community that was created, everyone was uncle and auntie.
Yes.
But equally the foundation from where you come from also promoted great connectedness with earth and nature.
Yeah.
So you got these forces, these powerful force of connectedness to something so grand that seems to be almost innate in your life.
It was about respect. And this is where, again, I know I keep going back to this, but it's so important. I am because you are. So the reason why people are fed and there's no starvation is because there's care for the land.
Yeah. Mm.
We treat it with respect, just like I treat uncles and aunties with respect. And I get something out of that, the values they teach me, the wisdom they impart on me, the confidence they give me, because, you know, I am because
yeah.
you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you come to Australia. Share with us what you see, given that you have come from that foundation. Hey, I think our listener actually deserves also to know right now, you are a major force, a major marketing force for sizable, reputable companies, head of marketing, head of branding. Mm. This morning you spoke at Government House. To who?
To, well, there were ministers, there were senior leaders of big organizations, so different people.
So someone sees in you that you have the clout, you have the expertise to be the right speaker to speak about personal branding. Dear listeners, this young lady from Zimbabwe has got the goods here. She has got a lot of punch behind her. So you come to Australia, invited by Australia?
Yes, invited by Australia.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you're coming to a prospective, a high-level management executive job in Australia?
No. That's not how it quite works. So
give us a quick version.
So you get an invitation based on the skills you have.
I get you.
Yes. So the skills that my husband and I have were required in Australia.
Yeah.
So we got invited.
Yeah.
And then we came here and realized, oh, we're not going to be at the same level we were when we're in Zimbabwe. So that was a bit of an awakening for
right,
us.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So now we come back to the original question. Mm. Here is beautiful Em with all of these tremendous gifts, tremendous expertise, tremendous talents. And we've just heard about your foundation and your connectedness with community and people and nature. And you come to Australia. What's your experience?
Oh, the first 2 years were very confusing for me.
Yeah.
And I was terribly homesick. And one of the things that I found strange was people just don't come to your house and you don't go to people's houses. We didn't know our neighbors, tried to, but I think there's a bit of, I don't think it's aloofness. I think people just find it strange if you're too friendly. I don't know why, because like that was natural, normal for me. But I found quite disconnected from everything.
Yeah.
People feed me. Like I love to be surrounded by people. I love to be surrounded by community. And I didn't have that here.
Yeah.
And I really struggled. And my heart broke for my then 2-year-old because, you know, back home in Zimbabwe, she would be playing with other people's kids. Like, that was natural.
Yeah.
But here in Australia, she was isolated. She was by herself. There was no one else. It was extremely lonely. And I started working. That was a shock as well.
What was the shock then? What was the shock? What surprised you?
The individualism. Mm. So in Zimbabwe, I held a lot of senior marketing positions. And one of the key things that I always did with my team was I put my team at the forefront and I advocated for them to get salary increases, promotions. We would meet at my house. Like my team, I cared for my team. And if something went wrong, I took it on. I was the one that got into trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll obviously have a chat with them later.
but I took it on.
Yeah, you know, I took it on. But what I quickly found in Australia was some leaders had no problems throwing their team members under the bus. Mm. That was so strange for me. And head down, working hard, producing quality work, did not get the promotion, did not get the salary increase. But the leader was very, not just the leader, but depending on who they liked.
Yeah.
Again, that was strange for me because you don't really play favorites as a leader.
Yeah.
Everyone's valuable.
Yeah.
But I quickly realized they are favorites.
Yeah.
And the favorites get credit for your work.
Yeah.
Again, concept. So I came very trusting. Yeah. I'll produce great work, hand it over to my leader. What I never expected was for my work to be credited to someone else.
Yeah.
And I was like, it blew my mind. I was conflicted. I could not really connect with anyone. And I struggled a lot. And it then changed when there's a team that I joined. And I think, and there's something in the story because one of the girls in the team, her name was Kylie. Kylie had been to, she told me, oh, I've been to Africa. And I was like, right, where in Africa? And she started listing the countries. I was like, oh, okay. Good on you. You've been to some. I haven't been. But she said when she went to, when she was visiting all those countries, she learned that, she said she saw people that were so joyful.
Yeah.
Mm. And they were joyful and they were so giving.
Yeah.
There she was. She said she needed water and someone just gave her water with no expectations. So she saw the generosity, everything.
Yeah.
And when she found out I was coming into the team, like everyone in the team, I still know their names up to now. There was Kylie, there was Anne. Actually, of course I do. They're still all my friends. There was Kylie, there was Anne, there was Sandra. And they all learned to say my name properly.
Don't look at me like that.
Before I joined. So after 2 years and joining that team, that was, that I felt was like I was back home.
Yeah.
And I actually did suffer a little bit from depression and I would cry every night. I wanted to go back home. This was not what I'd signed up for. But joining that team and someone who had experienced Africa in the sense that Kylie had, she knew exactly what I needed in that team. Yeah. And the team knew exactly what would help me feel part of it. So that was really lovely and that changed a little bit. I mean, the team was great, but obviously the leaders hadn't been to Africa, so.
Yeah. It sounds as if you were suffering a values divide, a values, the lack of synergy between your home values and what you were experiencing here. Can we play a game?
Oh, let's do
it. All right, here we go. Okay. Here's the game. I'm going to pretend I'm in an Australian corporation. Remember, I've worked a lot with these corporations, and I'm going to mention what I could imagine might be one of my values, but I'm going to be very, very open and transparent about it, right? And you can counter with one of the values that you would have been promoting and being back in Zimbabwe if you were running an organization. Mm. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say we value power.
Mm.
What would you say that you valued over there in Zimbabwe?
Empowerment.
Okay. We value status.
Community.
Value being right.
Collaboration.
Value competitiveness.
Unity.
Competitiveness, by the way, even within the team.
A strange one.
We value getting the job done no matter what.
We value wellness.
We value protectionism. I've got to protect how I am developing and evolving, even if it's at the expense of.
I am who I am because you are.
Yeah, wow. I think that is, you know, and I want our listeners to forgive me because I cannot say that is all the companies that I've worked with, but I will say this. Over 30 years of consultancy and as a team-building trainer, I've seen how the values that I was talking about erode and dilute the effectiveness. And I'm just amazed that we were never allowed to talk about things like love, nurture, care, connectedness, family. These were, up until recently, these were words that were at odds with the professional position of being in a commercial organization. I don't think they are now. I think we're slowly breaking down the walls, and these words are starting to take on behavior manifestation in companies. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah. What I find strange is if you look at a lot of organizations that have, and I'll call it as it is, that have toxicity within them, and toxicity where there's the ego at play, people are thrown under the bus. The revenue and profit, because that's what organizations care about, right? What's the revenue? What's the profit? The revenue and the profit doesn't grow. At times it even lowers, it reduces, but there's no change in, like there's no push to change behavior because no one wants to admit that it's the behavior that's causing this.
I like that.
You know, but back in Zimbabwe and recently as in my last previous role, productivity, creativity, innovativeness, all those things which organizations want. I was leading an extremely diverse team in age, in race, in gender, like totally diverse. Yeah. And what we did as a team was we won together.
Yeah.
So if something went right, we celebrated together. It was not about individuals.
Yeah.
And this was a bit foreign to some people in the team, but they got onto it and everyone in the team benefited. And we were a high-performing team because of the concepts I believe in, that it has to be community.
Yeah.
It has to be community different. It's not about who's the star person and people are, you know, stabbing each other. Like, that is not a concept that I ever got comfortable with.
Yeah.
So you get this, you've got increased productivity, you've got increased. So the math and the science is right, that the evidence is there.
Yeah.
That depending on how you treat people and the values that you cherish, you're either going to remain where you are, or you're going to grow at levels that you probably wouldn't imagine you grow. But we have to deal with the ego. If you still feel that it has to be about me and I'm important, then there will not be no growth.
Yeah.
So it's that whole balance. Yeah, it's that whole balance.
I think that's such a great takeaway for the work sphere too. And that's a good thing you can start to do with your team, celebrating communally, making it about community. Would you have any advice? How do you take that kind of attitude into the home as well? Because for a lot of people, it's going to be a lot easier to start at home than to try to change the workplace culture. So you got any advice along those lines?
Yeah, just be there for your family. I love talking to people. And in conversations, I'm always surprised when someone says, oh, I haven't spoken to my dad in 10 years. I haven't spoken to my mom in 5 years. And that is bizarre for me. So in my culture, we have this thing where the parents are never wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the parents are never wrong. And yes, there's fights, like we're not saying it's all kumbaya, but the element of respect is I will always talk to my mom.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what happens, but that connection is very important.
Yeah.
And I can never understand how you have a fight with a sibling or a parent and not talk to them ever. There's something that's lost there.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, like, I would love a researcher with billions of dollars to do this research, but there's that connectivity that's lost.
Yeah.
So with most of the people that I've come across who've got all these, you know, the broken relationships, all these things, something goes missing.
Yeah.
Because you lose something.
Yeah.
You know, and I found, so the advice I would give, if you haven't spoken to your children or haven't spoken to your parents, pick up the phone and talk to them.
Yeah.
Repair those relationships because those are critical. If you've got kids, it means your kids are growing up without aunties, without uncles, without grandparents. Mm. So what does that do? It's breeding more individualism because it's about me and my family. So I've got one child and I've got a husband. So if I have these views of it's about us, that means my child's going to grow up thinking we're the only, like, this is family.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
Yeah.
The decisions she's going to make are not going to be decisions based on what benefits community because she doesn't know what community is.
Mm.
But by exposing her to other people and how other people live and work in life, she's going to be a better human being.
Yeah.
g'day listeners, your great hair of keys in the rugged highlands of self-actuation. It's Lachlan Chip Hoodie here, and I'll drop the Scots accent now because we are coming at you from our beautiful hotel room here in Kathmandu, Nepal. So that is why the audio quality is a little bit different than what you'd be used to. I hope it's not too much of a shock, but let's get back to the loaded question because there was no way I was letting that thought pass without hitting you with another of my loaded questions, because what Em just said hit me hard, and not because I haven't spoken to my mum and dad in a while, but because it threw into stark relief how long it's been since I spoke on the phone to one of my best mates. He lives in a different city, but he's one of my best mates. And it's been years since we've spoken, because he's a caller, but I'm not. I don't really like talking on the phone. It's this thing I have. So I never made the effort to call him. And after a while, he just stopped calling me. And the tragedy is I miss those calls. So here's the question. Who's that person you still love, who always makes you smile when you think of them, who always triggers those words in your mind? I'd love to speak with them, that you, for whatever reason, haven't spoken to in ages. Who are they? And do you still have their number?
I'd like to extrapolate what you're saying. I'm getting very excited at the because I'm listening very carefully, and you're saying that the core is that connectedness with family. Mm-hmm. But then you went wider than family. The core actually then becomes the connectedness with community. Why you even call members of that community uncle and auntie, you know? Mm. If we go even wider than that and even further in the outer circles, you were going to arrive at a point where this is a view of humanity, where the love of family takes on a love of humanity. I think in Africa, I really felt that it was possible for people to see everybody genuinely as their brother and their sister, not their flesh blood, but they saw each other, the connectedness, the equity of humanity. When that happens, and this is where I want your response, I think then love becomes a lifestyle. I think then love becomes a philosophy. It becomes a way of life. Now, if you're a manager of an organization and you're seeing life that way, can you imagine the values and the behaviors that you're bringing in to the people that you've just met that are your employees or the ones that you've recruited? How are you going to – you're going to treat them differently from that perspective. I need to shut up now because –
See, you got him excited, hey?
Because it is a question. But,
it's a question, but it's a really good point as well. Because
thank you.
You stop seeing people as numbers on a spreadsheet.
Beautiful. Mm.
You start seeing people as living human beings that have a life.
Yeah.
That contribute. So the way that they interact and are treated in this organizational space,
yeah,
that's going to translate how they are going to treat their loved ones when they get home.
Yeah.
Because we spend more time at work than we do at home.
Yeah.
And I'll give you this. So my daughter has white aunties, brown aunties, black aunties. And the reason this is because we, like I said, we are about community.
Yeah.
So my friends are not friends that we meet at a restaurant and, you know, they never come to my house. There are people who come to my house. There are people who I go to their homes. I mean, a few of them were a bit shocked when I just opened the fridge and sort of looked for something to eat or the pantry.
Yeah, I get normal. In trouble for that too.
But that's pretty normal. Like if you come to my house, yeah, I'm not going to serve you. Like go sort yourself out. You know everything is.
My food is your food.
Yeah, exactly.
Help yourself.
You know, and this has become – like with my daughter and the way that she's seen my interactions with my friends, and with my friends, the way that we're family. Like, you know, she's got her Auntie Sandra who gives her gifts, and she needs to stop because she spoils my daughter. And then she's got her Auntie Anne who again sends gifts. So getting into this thing where they understand how we operate, and understanding how valuable family and community is. And we've built this community where we have potlucks. You know, people bring food, we sit, we eat. We don't do the whole, lunch is 12 to 2 p.m.
Yeah.
No, start coming to the house from 12 and we can be there until 11 p.m. or someone starts sleeping. And if you need to sleep, there's a spare room, you can sleep in there. Mm. And that's what I want to build. And that's what I'm building. And I think if more of us practiced this and got out a little bit out of our individualism and what makes me look good, but what's good for the collective, it is connection.
Yeah.
I mean, recently we read that there's loneliness is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
Why is that? You know, because we're not connecting.
Yeah.
We're not connecting. We spend time on our phones, on social media. That's not human connection.
Yeah.
And someone shared actually at Parliament House this morning, someone shared that the happiest people on the planet are people that spend at least 6 hours in face-to-face conversations.
Face-to-face.
Interconnectedness.
But
if you're at home by yourself, who are you connecting with?
But what you're stimulating here is this personal philosophy. There doesn't seem to be any line that stops you from bringing this whole personal philosophy of loving people and loving life, loving that connectedness, and you bring it wherever you go, and that includes the workplace. There is no, I step into the workplace, therefore I take on a difference.
There isn't that.
You even invite your department and all the people back to your home for meetings.
Yeah, that was very normal. That was very normal in Zimbabwe. Like, I had a leader who's also my dear aunt. We would go to her house.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was a leader. We would go to her house. When I became a leader, that was natural for me. I would invite people to my house.
Yeah.
It was normal.
And you even started doing it in Australia.
We did it in Australia.
Yeah. And you spoke about Auntie Sandra and Auntie Anne before, and now it's almost as if you're saying they adopted your way a little bit, and in adopting your way, they're giving gifts to your daughter.
Yeah,
they're walking into the house left, right, and center, and there's another gift over here. They're adopting your values.
But
in
you know
a way.
What I think? Yeah. I think they're just going back to their center.
Ah.
I think all of us at our center are all connected, and we all have this. So while Ubuntu is an African
word, I want you to spell that word. Spell that word.
U-B-U-N-T-U.
Yeah, I love that word.
And I think at the core, all of us have that. All of us. And, you know, I'll tell you this. I was on the train one time, and I was crying because it was within the first 2 years. I was crying. I was really homesick, and I was extremely sad and depressed. And I was just crying. I couldn't stop myself. And a woman just came, sat next to me, and just held me gently. We didn't say anything. Mm. I still have no idea who she is. But she was a white woman, came, sat next to me, and just held me gently. So to me, I have no idea who she was. But what drove her to do that?
Ubuntu.
Exactly. So I think that all of us have it, but it's about the moment that you realize we're not in competition. Mm. We're not in competition. You rising up means I rise up too.
Oh, you're beautiful.
So what does that mean? So I want everyone to rise, because you know what? It means my daughter is not going to have any issues because everyone's reason.
Yeah.
She's rising as well. So we're all collectively coming to a point where we can easily feed into each other.
Yeah.
So it's the natural state of things.
Mm. Do you know that at the start of this podcast and for the first half hour, 40 minutes, we were giving the whole nature of this conversation, this connectedness with people and no dividing line, love as a personal philosophy, and it exists in the family, and we widen it into our business circles. We were giving that, the foundation of that, credit to your background and foundation, and we were wrong. Because you just said it's core amongst all. It's got nothing to do with Zimbabwe. Mm. It's got nothing to do with Africa. Although we might say, geez, they foster it well.
Yes.
They foster the awareness of it well.
Mm.
And so there might be culturally the opportunity to be more aware of it and to exist in that core, and not to be distracted by all the other crap that sometimes we experience when we go to the Western commercial corporate empire building paradigms of success.
It's the concept of success, because if you look at what is success? So to me, success is I do what I love, and then I go home and I sit down with my daughter, no phone, like we're phone free time, and we are connecting. We play the violin. My daughter and I do karate together.
Awesome.
Excuse me. You have a distinct advantage.
She's actually really good. I'm learning a lot from her, and I think I might need to have to do a different class, because she might just think she's better than her mom. But there's so to me, so it's about what is success. To some people, success is driving a big expensive car.
Yeah.
To some people, success is having a big home or wearing most expensive clothes and labels and all that. But I think when you are so connected with yourself, so there's this exercise that I encourage people to do. So after my talk this morning, I handed out a worksheet, and I'd love to share that worksheet with you.
That'd be
but
great.
I handed out that worksheet, which, and I love using psychology, because while most of these concepts are based from how I was brought up, there's actually psychological evidence that they work.
Yeah.
So in this this concept, they like to call it inner child, connecting with your inner child.
Yeah.
I call it connecting with the innocent part of you that's untainted by the negativity or what you've observed around you. Because at some point in your life, there's that wild child running around naked, doesn't care, without a care in the world, hugging the whole world. Because they are so attuned to who they are.
Yeah.
And they are attuned to everything around them. So it's not about, there's no fear.
Yeah.
And if we did the work, if we all collectively did the work and went back to that child who is free and wild and loves freely and eats from any place, just imagine the power we could all collectively have.
Yeah.
Because success then doesn't become about the most expensive car, because the most expensive car doesn't fit all my people.
No.
But I'm going to maybe buy a big car because I want to take other people's kids to the beach when when the parents are busy. So my decisions become based on how best does my success serve the community.
Yeah. But the work that you're referring to isn't sort of like to add on to what you haven't got. The work is actually unlearning and undoing so that you can actually realize who you already are.
Exactly. And again, if you think of, so our brain is so adaptable. So if you learned it, you can unlearn it. And it's a concept called neuroplasticity, where you can train your brain to become who you need to become.
Yeah.
So, you know, people say, oh, I am like this, I'm like this. No, you can change it.
Yeah.
The brain is adaptable. It is not, it's adaptable.
Chip, Louise Bennett called it the source. Returning to source when the baby is born. It's born of source, you know. Hilary Langford referred to it in the Enneagram description, where she spoke about the jewel. When we're born, we're like got this inner light. you know. Mm. And here you are talking about it in simple terms, like returning to the inner child. Mm. But we're saying that no matter what we call that place, yeah, it's in that place where exists loving connection, nurture,
creativity,
innovation. Mm. They're all part of that one family.
When you think of creativity, the reason why some people say I'm not creative is they're blockers. Mm.
Yeah.
They're blockers. There's something in you that's stiffened up.
Yeah.
And you're protecting yourself from something. It could be criticism. It could be words or whatever it is. But when you unlock all of that and you're free and you're not worried about what people will say or the effects, all of that, and you're connected to everything going around you, you become creative.
Yeah, mm. Yeah.
You know, you become creative, and it can be in any way, any format.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of these problems seem to arise from the layering on top of like the basic self, the inner child, as you talk about, the layering on top of all of these really unhelpful cultural expectations, right? Like you need to have money. A really damaging one is, you know, the limited nature of things. So like any time you spend on somebody else's child is taking away time from your child, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there like a first step that you could recommend people who are stuck in that mindset? Like what's a practice? Some people say meditation, you know, some people say breath work, some people say mindfulness, get back to nature. Like is there an action you can give people to start getting away from those poisonous thoughts and expectations?
Oh, I have a simple one. Self-affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
So again, feeds off from meditation and all these things. But self-affirmations is where you get to a point where you're telling yourself who you are in the present.
Yeah.
So if I want to be a great leader, if I wake up every morning, and this is something that I shared again this morning, where you talk about who you want to be. So I am a great leader. Every morning, I am a great leader. And there's actually something that you can do, like there's an action with your hands that you can do, because we said neuroplasticity and the brain is adaptable. So if we want to jog our brain and wire it, it's easy. You just put your left hand here and your right
hand. Left hand here where?
On your forehead.
Then
your right hand at the back of your head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like you are telling your brain,
yeah,
I am a great leader. I am a great advocate. And you're telling your brain that every single morning.
Yeah.
What will happen? You will become a great leader.
Yeah.
You will become a great community person. And look, saying self-affirmation sounds very shallow,
yeah,
but it is such a powerful exercise.
Yeah.
That every day you're rewiring your brain and you're telling yourself, this is who I am at my core.
Yeah.
Hmm.
How much does telling yourself be a catalyst for shift versus the action that comes with what you're telling yourself? Like, we can say that I'm a great leader, but surely it's got to manifest itself to a point where you start to act according to some degree with what great leadership looks like. Yeah.
Because you're telling yourself, right? So you're telling your brain that I'm a great leader. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to manifest itself.
Yeah.
And your action. So it means you're going to read leadership books. You're going to get coaching for leading.
Now.
You deliberately.
Yeah. Now we're getting to, I think, because I've got now you, Chip, that.
The critical mass.
The critical mass. You comment on the critical mass, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bern and I talk a lot about that on the podcast. There seems to be, from everyone we talk to, if you hear the same message enough times from enough different sources, that seems to give you a critical mass of learning that then makes action inevitable, or it feels effortless anyway, because you've actually internalized that lesson. I think what you're saying with that, you know, that positive self-affirmation, coupled, I think actually putting the hands on the head and manifesting that in the real world in some way, that probably really like multiplies the result. I think that is just another brick in that wall of learning. And probably at the start of the day and training yourself to think that way for the rest of the day, that's probably a part of that too. Yeah.
But what's interesting there, Em, is that Chip is actually suggesting that the source of manifestation can come, one, from within by self-affirmation, but it can also come from other sources. But in fact, it's feeding the brain, the body, the experience, the being from books, podcast, self-affirmation, all of that together is the collective learning, which at some stage has got to spill over past the critical mass. Yeah. Next thing you know, you're being it.
Yes.
Yeah, because learning is the driver of neuroplasticity. Yeah. So learning is the kind of, it's a mental exercise, right? You lift weights to get bigger muscles. You think, you learn in productive ways to train that mind.
Yeah.
And there has to be an action to it. So, you know, there are people who've spent thousands of dollars attending conferences on motivation speakers and all that, but nothing has changed in their lives because they've not taken the action. They've not applied what they're learning through they've just not adopted it. Yeah. They haven't adopted it. So you can hear, but there has to be the acceptance of the message.
Yeah.
And that's where the neuroplasticity, that's where the adaptability starts to occur, when you acknowledge that, you know what? I need to do the work.
Yeah.
But the work could be as simple as just a self-affirmation.
Yeah, exactly. It's not complicated. So one of the exercises that I do with my clients is identifying what their intrinsic motivators are.
Yeah.
So, and the reason I love doing this is because what people think motivates them is actually not what motivates them.
Yeah.
So when we start this exercise, people tell me they want to be the CEO, they want this and all of those things. But when we then do it again after the exercise of exploring the inner child, they want to go hiking, because that gives them joy. They want to have friends over for coffee and have conversations. They want to sit barefoot on the floor with their friends playing cards or whatever it is. That's, and it's the same thing. I've spoken and worked with a lot of people. Initially, before doing the inner child exercise, it's about the material things.
Yeah.
After connecting, it's now more about connectedness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think we take people to Nepal? Yeah. Why was Africa such an attractive destination for us? It was Kilimanjaro. It was people. It was learning. It was growing.
Yeah.
Hey, Em, what a magnificent exploration today. And I feel that in our search for the modified existence, Chip, I just feel that we added a bit more color to it in this conversation today. So for our listeners that are regulars, I think they would have just heard another, put the paintbrush in the color, and it's been added to the big easel of the picture that we're trying to paint. It's becoming a fraction clearer as a result of today's conversation. Chip, does that resonate with you, mate?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's more than a stroke, though. I think to hear from someone like Em, who's really embodied that kind of modified existence, it's really powerful. Yeah. And you can hear the joy in her voice too.
Yeah,
and I think you can tell, you know, even though it's an audio thing, when she got real pumped up, you know, you could almost see the arm gesticulations.
It was
powerful.
Yeah. Take a breath, Em, finish it off. I want to give you a microphone, and I'm letting you know this microphone is going to the rest of the world, all right? And I want you to, in 1 minute, what is your message to the rest of the world? What must they hear in these modern times? What is the opportunity, world? This is from Imaginus.
Imagnus.
Come on.
This is from M. You've got the microphone. Speak to the world, please, darling.
if we saw each other as human beings living and breathing with cares and everything that goes on in our world, if we saw each other and were driven more by empathy and curiosity, we would all become phenomenal.
Well, congratulations. You got the tears in my eyes. I'm so grateful that you brought your spirit and your heart to all of our listeners, and I thank you ever so much. Chip, how do you thank this wonderful lady?
It's been such a pleasure and a privilege.
It's been great.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I've had fun.
Yeah. Chip, what did you really think, dear man?
I think that usually I'd be a bit worried because I'm not sure what to put in my take-home pay, but Em was so good at communicating these ideas. I've got so many great directions to take this in, so I can't wait to get to it. Let's get
Mate,
to it.
Mate, give us one direction that's top of mind over there and you think you just might not be able to let go of it.
It's going to be around community and it's going to be around simple actionable steps to start cultivating a mindset that you need to get to a place where we can enjoy and value that sense of community that Em was talking about.
Buddy, I'm letting you know, mate, I can't wait because I love I love your take-home pays and I love your loaded questions, mate. You take it away and bring it to life for every beautiful listener to this particular episode.
Thanks, Bern. Thank you so much, Magnus. And thank you, listeners, you curious prairie dogs on the high plains of understanding. Thank you for joining me, Chip Lachlan Huddy, for another edition of Chip's Take Home Pay, in which I distill the strongest themes of the podcast you just listened to into concrete action steps so that you can begin to apply the wisdom of our guests to your life, not next week, not tomorrow, but right now and today. Did you get the sense throughout this episode that we may need to linger on the concept of community? Because I sure did. Now, it's one of the many, many pleasures of doing this podcast. Shout out to Bernie Kelly for getting me on as co-host. Appreciate you, Bern, that I get to talk to, sit next to, bask in, sniff the hair of. Okay, I don't actually sniff them, but don't I? What I'm trying to say is I get to meet a lot of glorious people, and M is the latest in a long line of them. And you can hear me appreciating that in the episode, and that's because, take it from me, guys, when you sit next to someone who comes from a culture which has vastly superior practices in terms of cultivating inspiring, vital, confident, impressive people, you can feel it. I felt it. And I want you to feel that as well. I want that for you. And the only way you get that I get that, is by cultivating in our own cultures those aspects of a Magnus's culture that so highly value community. So here's the action step. Usually I'd give you some guff about how you start your own community. Find a passion, find fellow passionates, and gather them around you. And that's not bad advice, but I don't think it's the best, not when you're starting out. Because remember what M's main point was? How can what I am doing benefit community? That is such a powerful question. So let's start there. And it's my job to break it down for you even further. So here is your three-step plan. Step one, identify your offering. And how you do that is by asking yourself these two questions in this order. What am I good at? What do I love to do? Okay? What am I good at? What do I love to do? Step two now, ask yourself this one question. Who in my local area could benefit from this skill? Who in my local area could benefit from this skill? Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you may have to do some research to answer that one. Fire up Google, beseech Chat GPT, go forth, my industrious prairie dogs, and make thine selves learned. Step three then, make contact with those people who need your offering and ask them this one question. Can I help you with this offering? Then all you have to do is wait for a response. And maybe follow up if you haven't heard back after 7 days because everyone's busy, you know. Don't ever take silence personally. All right, that's all from me, beautiful people. And I will just leave you with the usual request to please jump on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or the podcast player of your choice. Leave us a rating and review. We'd love a 5-star review. That helps us the most algorithmically. But of course, we're happy with the truth and we trust you to do the right thing. Also, don't forget to jump on our website, journeywithbernie.co. That's journeywithbernie.co, not .com. Jump on there where you'll find the show notes to this and every other episode, and also ways to get involved with whatever we're doing right now, which could be a trip to Nepal like the one we find ourselves on at this moment, or it could be some kind of community outreach. It could be some kind of one-off meditation retreat. It could be raising money for a very worthy cause like James Lingwood's documentary, A Light in the Slaughterhouse. All right, beautiful people, I am Chip Huddy. This has been Chip's Take Home Pay, and I do hope you found some pay worth taking home. As always, my friends, auf Wiedersehen, and just remember...